I'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Tzaddik Tes. I want to take the opportunity again to thank Yehuda Neuberger for giving the shiur over the past two Shabbosos. Yasha koach, it's not an easy preparation. And shkoach to everyone again who comes early on Shabbos morning. So let's begin. Top of Tzaddik Tes, Amud Aleph, Tanur Rabbanon. So Tanur Rabbanon. So the Gemara now brings a couple of these, we'll call them interesting cases. So a few more. So the Gemara says, Yesh cholitz li'imo misafik, lachosu misafik, libito misafik. There is the possibility that a person can end up doing chalitza with his mother, misafik. Now again, what we'll see is what that really actually means is he can end up doing chalitza with a woman who may be his mother. La'achoso misafik, he could end up doing chalitza with his sister misafik. Again, same thing, end up doing chalitza with a woman who may be his sister. And labito misafik, and he may end up doing chalitza with a woman who may be his daughter. So the Gemara goes through each of these cases. So the Gemara says, Ketzad imo. So Ketzad, excuse me. Ketzad. So what are the cases? So the Gemara says the following. I'm sorry. So we'll say if there was a woman, let's say again, we'll call it his mother, and we'll define this in just a moment, but his mother and another woman, and the, each of these two women, we'll call them A and B, each of these two women had sons previous to the episode that's about to be described. And what happened? And then these two women were in hiding for some reason, and they ended up giving birth to two more sons. Each of them had a son while in hiding. And again, what happened? And it was not clear whose son was which, meaning the two children got confused because they were in hiding. Uba bina shalzeh, vinasa imo shalzeh. So we'll say, remember, at this point in time now, so the two ladies, we'll call them again A and B, each have now two sons. One, they each had two sons before the hiding episode, so they each knew which particular son was theirs. And now, while in hiding, they each had another son. So what happened? The two sons they had before the hiding incident came, and each of the sons married the other woman. So let's say the son of A married B, and the son of B married A. So far, absolutely no problems. What happens? Here's the problem. Ooh, all right, don't please, don't insert your own editorial comments here, please, all right? So the Gemara says, and what happens? Umesu, I'm sorry? We'll do CND, right? Umesu bulobanim. So now what happens? Now the two sons who married the two mothers, again, each married the mother of the other, these two sons died, these two boys died without children. Of course, now you see where the problem is going to become. So what happens, Rabbi Say? So the two women fall to Yibum. Who do they fall to Yibum? They fall to Yibum to the two brothers of the two men who died. The problem is what? That we don't know exactly whose brother is who. And to add complications to the mix is that for the two surviving brothers, one of the two widows is their mother. So remember, again, we'll say, so just, I should have probably Xerox the chart on this, but it's very clear. It's very clear. It's exceptionally clear. So again, so remember, essentially now, these two widows who were married to the two brothers, so now when you have the two surviving brothers, those are the two boys who were born in hiding. Therefore, again, these two boys don't know exactly. They know that one of the two widows, one of those two widows, is their mother. But they don't know which one. To complicate matters even more, those two women now are not only their potential mothers, but what? Also their sisters-in-law, for whom they have to do yibum. So what's the halacha? So we'll say, obviously, in a case like this, they can't do yibum. Why can't they do yibum? Because they run the risk of potentially doing yibum with their mother. So they have to do chalitza with each of the women. So each of the surviving brothers does chalitza with each of the women. Nimsa kol echad ve'echad cholitz ne'imo misafek. Therefore, I will say, it turns out that what? That this is the case of where a man could potentially do chalitza with his mother misafek. Okay, so that's case number one. Next, lachos misafek. So where do you have a case of where you could end up going ahead and doing chalitza with your sister, misafik, ketzad, imo v'isha cheres shi'alu shtei nekevos b'machvei. So we'll say same thing, in hiding. So there are two women, so let's say the mother and another woman are in hiding, and they both give birth to girls. Okay, and obviously I'll say same thing, is the parenthood, the maternity of each of these daughters is not clear. It's not clear because they're in hiding. Therefore, the parentage is not clear. Now I'll say now again, ubo acheichen shelo me'osa ha'em v'nasum. Now what happens? Each of these women were married to a man who ultimately, again, had children, had sons from another marriage. So therefore, again, their half-brothers, from another marriage, came along and married them. So we married them umesu belobanim. And then what happens? And then, again, they died without children. So what's the halacha? I'll say same thing. Choleitz l'shtehen. Ultimately, again, their surviving brothers have to go ahead and do chalitza. Now, by the way, when we say they had brothers, that refers, again, to sons of these two women. So they go ahead and they do chalitza with both of these women. And again, I both say same thing. Nimtza cholitz la'achoso misafek. It could turn out that what? That, again, remember, the reason they have to do chalitza is because there is the possibility that one of the widows is, in fact, what? One of the widows is, in fact, the sister. Therefore, again, obviously, you can't do yibam at all. So we do chalitza with both of these women, misafek. Therefore, that turns out to be a case of a man who does chalitza with his sister out of safek. Now, again, I must say, I want to be clear. Just the wording is very important here. He's not doing chalitza with his sister out of safek. He's doing chalitza with a woman who may be his sister. So, meaning he's doing chalitza with a woman who is his sister, misafek. So, next case. Libito misafek, Kate. So, what's the case of where you may do chalitza with your daughter out of safek? And again, I will say, same thing, where you may end up doing chalitza with a woman who may be your daughter. Kate said, Ishto v'isha cheres shi'adu shtei nekevus amachva. So, I will say, a man's wife and another woman give birth to two girls. And again, I will say, the reason why the Gemara brings up all these cases in hiding is because that's the case where the Maisa, what? Where doubt in terms of parentage could come up. So a man's wife and another woman give birth to two girls while in hiding. And obviously, again, they're not sure whose daughter belongs to who. Ubo acheihen, I will say, now watch this gets a little even more complicated. Ubo acheihen v'nasum. So I will say, what happens? So now these two girls were born in the cave. We're not sure who belongs to who. Now acheihen, the brothers. Now whose brothers? This refers to the brothers of the fathers. So again, remember, just to keep this easy. No, we're ready to keep this easy. But again, so let's close it. I'll say, so Reuven is married to Rachel. Shimon's married to Leah. Again, no one is related right now. Rachel and Leah give birth to two girls in the cave, and we're not sure whose child is who. So what happens? The brother of Reuven and the brother of Shimon come along and marry these two girls. Okay, brothers Reuven and Baruch should come married to girls. So what happens? Ubo achein v'nasum, umesu b'lobanim. So we'll say, now what happens? The brothers of Reuven, the brothers of Shimon die without children. So we'll say, so watch this. So their wives, their widows, fall to who? To Yibum, to Reuven, and to Shimon. What's the problem, Rabbi Osai? Those widows, one of those girls is the daughters of each of these men, right? So, because remember, again, I'll say one more time: Reuven's married to Rachel, Shimon's married to Leah. Rachel and Leah have children in a cave, two girls. The maternity of the two children are mixed up. We don't know whose is whose. What happens? The brothers of the fathers marry the two girls. That's no problem with that. But then again, they die without children. When they die without children, again, these two girls fall before Reuven and Shimon for Yibum. So the problem, of course, is what? That one of these two girls, one of these is the daughter, we just don't know which. These two girls, one thing we know clear, which is what? Reuven and Shimon are the father of these two girls. What don't we know? Which one is which? So therefore, how do we deal with this case? Zeh choleitz libito misafek, v'zeh choleitz libito misafek. So we'll say, it turns out that what? Each of them end up doing chalitza with their daughters misafek. So again, or better stated, each of them end up doing chalitza with both of these girls, knowing full well that what? That one of them is their daughter. Okay, it's interesting. Tanya. It's also interesting, by the way, you say to yourself, where do you ever go? Where are you going to have a situation of people giving birth and hiding? So I say, you know, it's amazing how we live in such different times. Although the events of what happened to Erev Shabbos sometimes tell us that our circumstances are not all that different. But, you know, there are thousands of years of persecution. You know, we live, the life we live is such an aberration of the diaspora existence of the Jew, of freedom and a security and at least perceived safety and security. It's, but again, the Gemara doesn't like pull these kind of cases out of it. These are contrived cases, of course, but the notion of people giving birth in hiding was a historical reality for us. Just interesting to think about. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tanya, Hari Rameir, or Rameir said, Ish vi Isha, suppose this is another very interesting case, a man and woman, sometimes they could give birth to children from five different nations. Now, what this really means is it doesn't mean five different nations. What it means is that we could come up with a case of where within one family, you think your family is complicated, so we could go ahead and come up with a case of incredible genealogical familial complications. So what's an example? Let's listen to this. Ketzad. Yisrael shalakach eved v'shifcha. So Yisrael purchases an eved v'shifcha. So he purchases two non-Jews, for the purpose of being his eved v'shifcha. Min hashuk, from the marketplace. V'lohen shnei banim. Rabbi say, now listen to this. So he purchases eved v'shifcha, and eved v'shifcha already have two sons. Rabbi say, here's what's interesting. When you purchase an eved v'shifcha, and let's say they have children already, their children don't automatically become avodim and shvachos. What are their children? Right? Good Gentiles, right? They're just Gentiles. They're Gentiles. So what happens? And I purchased the Eved V'Shifcha. So they're my Eved V'Shifcha. They have two sons. V'niskayer echad mehen. And what happens? Listen to this. And one of them converted. Okay. So the Gemara says, V'niskayer echad mehen. V'nimtza echad ger. So we'll say, so now watch this. So one of the children decided to go ahead and convert. So now you have two avadim, one ger, and one akum. Okay, watch this. Hit bilan the shame avdus. Now you go ahead. Remember, when a Jew purchases Gentile servants, so you immerse, we've seen this already in this Masechta, you immerse those avodim l'shem avdus, which is like a quasi-conversion. So now I go ahead and I immerse the avodim l'shem avdus for the sake of servitude. V'nizkiku zelazeh. So now again, both Eved and Shivcha were now immersed for the sake of avdus. And now what happens? Now they have another child together. V'nizkiku zelazeh. Harekan ger va'ovei kochavim ve'eved. So now what happens? So now what do we have over here? So now we have a ger, because remember, one of the kids already converted. We have an oved kochavim, because one of the kids did not convert. Remember, we'll say, this is all this. Now, at this point in time, what the Gemara is saying is, the eved v'shifcha now have three kids, right? They have the two kids prior to their immersion in the Shema Avdus, one of those kids converted. So you've got a Jew, it's not a joke, by the way, right? We've got a Jew, right? You've got a Jew, an Akum, and now remember, that child who was just born has the status of what? Of an Eved, because remember, a child born to an Eved B'Shivcha, who are in servitude to a Jew, has status of an Eved. Okay, watch this. Shichrer es ha-Shivcha, uba aleha Eved. What happens now if the master emancipates the Shivcha? So what happens after he emancipates the Shivcha? What does she become? She becomes a full-fledged Jewess. Uba aleha Eved. And now her husband, or her former husband, the Eved, has relations with her, and they have now a fourth child. So now what do we have? Hari Kan Ger, so who's the Ger? That was child number one. Ovid Kochavim, who was that? That was child number two. Eved, that was child number three. And now both have this fourth child, which is conceived and birthed as from a free woman, a free Jewish woman, and an Eved. What's his status? Mamzer. Now we'll say, we'll see. That sounds pretty wild. We'll discuss why that is, but that fourth child is a mamzer. Okay? Now watch this. We're not finished. Shichrer Shnehem. Now what happens if, again, at this point in time, the master decides to emancipate the Eved as well. So he emancipates both of them. The Shivcha as well as the Eved. The Asiyan Zelazeh, and they get married. Mazel Tov. So now what happens? Now they have another child, fifth child. So we'll say, look what we got. Child number one is a convert, Ger. Child number two just continued on his own way. He's an Akum. Child number three, who was born from his parents when they were Avadim, is an Eved. Child number four, who was born to his parents when his mother was free, but his father was still an Eved, is a Mamzer. And child number five, who was born after both of his parents were emancipated and married, is what? Is Yisrael. So we'll say... It means that he free emancipated the second one. At this point in time, now both of them are emancipated. So we'll say, watch this. So now the Gemara says, okay. So Gemara says, my kamash malon. What's the big deal? What's the big deal? What the Gemara is essentially saying is, what novelty have you taught me? It's interesting, but it's like anything here like is a jaw dropper. I mean, we've been through so much together, Rabbi Yosef, right? We've seen it all together. So this the truth is not like such a big chiddush. Oh, the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the chiddush is. Ovid Kochavim the Ever Haba Bas Yisrael Havlad Mamzer. No, the Chiddush case is what? That if, according to this opinion, or Shavuot say, we do not pass him, like, but according to this opinion, who holds that what? That a Jewish woman who conceives a child with either an Eved or a non-Jew, that offspring is a Mamzer. So that is a novelty, of course, a novelty that we do not accept Lahalacha, but a novelty in this case. Okay, so you just come up with a case where a man and woman, the same man and woman, could have five children, and each of those children has what? A distinct status. Although in truth, child number one and child number five, in this case, are both Jews, but child number one is a convert. Child number five, ultimately, again, is a naturally born Jew. Another interesting case. Another Tana Rabbanan. This is actually very interesting. Yesh mocher es aviv lahag bos imo ksuvasa. You could have a situation of a child who sells his father in order to go ahead and allow his mother to collect her ksuva. So watch. It's actually very interesting. So listen to this. Ketzad. Yisrael lakach eved v'shivcha min ashok. So what's it? Listen to this. So a Yisrael Jew purchases an Eved and a Shivcha, a Gentile servant and maidservant from the marketplace. Velohem ben, and they had a child already before, meaning they had a Gentile child. Vishichrer es ha-Shivcha, he emancipated the Shivcha. Vinasa, and now the Jewish master married the Shivcha. The Jewish master married the Shivcha, so he emancipated her. When he emancipates her again, she is a full-fledged Jewess, and the master goes ahead and marries her. I'm sorry? But when he emancipates her, there's no longer a union between them. Right? When he emancipates her, remember, again, a Jewish woman cannot be married to an Eved. So when he emancipates her, there's no longer a marriage. So what happens? V'amar v'kasav kol nechasav libna. And what happens? And this husband, this Jewish husband, writes, he gives away his entire estate to her son. Now, both say, now, who is her son? Her son is a Gentile. Right, her son is not Jewish. Nimtza, so I'll say, watch this. So now let's say again, so husband dies, her son inherits the entire estate of her Jewish husband. And I will say, now what happens? So now what's part of that estate? Part of that estate is the Eved of the Jew who happens to be the biological father of the son. So the son inherits his father, because remember, again, avodim are inherited, which means that technically speaking, if, let's say, the estate needs to pay off the ksuva, and the estate does not have enough liquid assets, then what could the son do? The son could sell his father in order to pay off the ksuva of his mother. Nimtza zemocher es aviv lahagbos li'imo ksuvasa. Therefore, you can have a case, and I will say, of course, the novelty, Tosis points out that there are some difficulties in this case, because this is a Gentile son. So this is assuming, by the way, that the Gentile son could go ahead and inherit the Jewish father, the Jewish husband, I should say. We're not going to get into those technicalities. Now let's assume that it works. So Lemaisi, you have a case where the son is able to sell off his own father, who happens to be the Eved, in order to satisfy the debts of his mother's ksuva. So he says, my kamash malon. It's like, what's the big chiddush in this? Kul Rabbi Meir. The Mishnah reflects the Rabbi Meir. Va'avda metaltali, u'metaltali mishtabli ksuvasa. So we'll say, the novelty could be in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Because Rabbi Meir both says an interesting discussion about what is the status of avodim. Meaning, how do you classify them? Are they real property or are they movable property? Are they like karka? Are they like land, like real estate? Or are they like metaltali? Are they movable property? Rabbi said that has major nafkaminas in satisfaction of debts. And it also has ramifications of ksuva, because the question is, what type of property is meshubed to the ksuva? So the Gemara says over here, the novelty over here is that this all goes according to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that number one, arvadim are metaltlin, avadim are movable property, and number two, metaltlin, movable property, have a lien against them for the ksuva, and therefore, again, this son could sell off his father, who is a servant, who is metaltlin, in order to satisfy his mother's ksuva debt. V'baisim, the other possibility is hakamash malon avda kimekarka dami. Or the other possibility is that no, the novelty in this ruling is that what? That an eved is treated like karka, and the ksuva only has, and the ksuva only creates a lien against real property, real estate. Okay, says the Mishnah. Jewish automatically becomes full-fledged Jewish. Absolutely. Says the Mishnah. So we'll say again, they happen to be just very interesting cases. Says the Mishnah. So we're not finished. A little bit more of these intriguing cases. Ha'isha, shenis arva vlada bevlad kalasa. So we'll say, you want to talk about mother-in-law, daughter-in-law issues. So listen to this. So now what happens? A woman's child gets mixed up with her daughter-in-law's child, right? So mother and daughter-in-law have children at the same time, but Lamaisa, again, the identity of the children gets mixed up. So what happens? Higdilu hata'aruvos. So what happens? The children grow up, v'nasu nashim, and they got married, umesu, and then they die. So in this case, again, the two children, the two boys who were born, so marry, and they die without children. So what's the halacha? Bnei HaKala, Choltzin v'lo miyadmin. So we'll say, the other sons, so one of the sons of the daughter-in-law, so let's say again, the daughter-in-law, let's say, had other sons that were definitely her sons. And I will say, the shayla is, when these boys die, so they have suffix brothers. We're not sure who their brothers are. Are their brothers the sons of the mother-in-law, or are their brothers the sons of the daughter-in-law, the kala? So the Gemara says, so the sons, now it uses the word, it uses it in plural, but it really merely means one. One of the sons of the daughter-in-law, cholzin v'lo miyavmin, does chalitza with each of these two women, but cannot do yibum. Why? Shehu safek eshes achiv, safek eshes achi aviv. Because the problem is that we're not sure, are these widows the wives of their brothers? Or are these widows the wives, ultimately, again, of the father's brother? So we'll say, if it's the widows of my brother, I could do yibum. But if it's the widows of my father's brother, that is an erva. That is an erva. And again, marriage would be prohibited. Therefore, because we're not sure as the identity of these women, therefore, the son of the daughter-in-law has to do chalitza, not yibum. Bnei Azekena, the son of the mother, meaning the vadai son of the mother, o choltz and o miyadmin. They can do chalitza or yibam. Why? Because also, what are the possibilities? Shesafek yeshes achiv, because the widows are either their brother's wives, in which case, again, yibam is permitted, or the eshes ben achiv, or ultimately, again, the wife of the son of my brother, which is not an erva either. So the Gemara says, Mesuak sherim. What happens again? If, let's say, instead of the ta'aruvos, instead ultimately again of the other sons dying, of the suffix sons dying, the ksherim sons dying, meaning when we say ksherim, what we mean ultimately is that the certain sons, meaning that we know that the son of the kala or the son ultimately of the zakena, the ones who we know are the sons of their respective mother dies. What's that halacha? Hata'aruvos. So what do the suffix sons do? So libnei zakena chotzim lo miyadmin. So for the son of the mother, we call this Zekina, so they have to do chalitz and not yibam. Why? Shu safek eshes achiv ve'eshes achi aviv. Because ultimately, again, that woman is a safek, whether or not it's the wife of my brother or if it's the wife of the brother of my father. Therefore, because there's a potential erva issue, they can only do chalitz and not yibam. Libnei akala. For the bnei akala, for the sons of the daughter-in-law, echad choleitz ve'echad miyabim. One does chalitza and one does yibum. Similarly, another case, kohenes shenis. We'll say, by the way, you should know, there's no real novelty in this case than what we learned before. It's just different characters, but the principle is still the same. That whenever, ultimately, again, the suffix creates a potential erva situation, so you have no choice but to do chalitza. When there is no potential erva situation, then ultimately, again, yibam is permitted. Kohanes shenis arei vlada blivlat shivchasa. What's another interesting case? Let's say the wife of a kohen gives birth, and her offspring, she gives birth at the same time as her shivcha. So what happens? So the two children get mixed up. So what's that, lacha? The Gemara says, hari elu ochlam etruma. both of these children. So let's say, both say, for argument's sake, they both have sons. So both of these boys are permitted to eat truma. But Rabbah say, now that's not such a chiddush. Why? Because remember, even a shifcha is permitted to go ahead and eat truma, because anyone who is the acquisition of the coin is permitted to go ahead and eat truma. So both children could go ahead and eat truma. That's not a problem. Now we'll discuss exactly what this means. They receive one portion at the granary, one portion of truma. We'll discuss that. Amud Beis. The Einon mitamin lemason. So we'll say, remember again, both of these boys cannot become tamei mace. Why? Because again, remember, they're both safek kohanim. Well, actually, I say it differently. One of them is definitely a kohen, but we're not sure which one. Therefore, the ma'aseh, both of them have to keep the strictures of the kohuna. Ve'ein nosin noshim ben ksheros ben psulos. Where we'll say, what's the problem? They can't go ahead and marry anyone. Why can't they marry anyone? Because it will say they can't marry ksheros. Why? Because the potential is that one of them is an eved, and the eved can't marry yisraelis. They can't marry shifchos. Why? Why? Because one of them is a kohen, and kohanim can't marry a shifcha. I mean, no yisrael can marry a shifcha.
So,
I'm sorry.
We're
not finished. So the Gemara says, "Ve'in nosin nashim bein ksheros bein psulos higdilu." So what happens when they get older? Higdilu ataruvos. So the two sons again, who were confused at birth, go ahead and grow up. V'shichreru ze'ezeh. So we'll say, what do? They emancipate each other. They emancipate each other. Remember, we're not sure which is the kohen and which is the eved. So they emancipate one another. So then after they emancipate one another, both say at this point in time, one thing is clear, which is what? Neither of them is an eved. Now, we don't know which one is a kohen, but we know for sure that neither of them is an eved. Oh, at this point in time, nosim nashim ruyos lekuna, now they can both marry. As long as what? As long as they marry women who are technically fit for the kuna. So meaning they can't marry a grusha, or they can't marry a chalutza, but they could both marry women who are fit for the kuna. Ve'in mitamei lemeisim, they cannot become tamei lemeis, because I must remember again, yeah.
You said they can both be mishtachar each other.
Correct.
How can the eved be mishtachar somebody?
We don't know who is who. So remember again, if he's the eved, so shichur doesn't mean anything. Meaning, one way or another, they're both free at the end of the day. So the Gemara says ve'ein metam lemeisim, but they still can't become tamei meis, right? They still can't go ahead. They still can't go ahead and become tamei lemeis, because Rabbi said, remember, at the end of the day, one of them is still a kohen. Ve'nitmu ein sof kines arboin. But if they do become tamei, you can't administer lashes. Why can't you administer lashes? Because at the end of the day, we don't know exactly if he was a kohen or not. Ve'in ochlim b'truma, they can't eat truma, because it was at this point in time, remember, one of them is not a kohen. So because one of them for sure is not a kohen, and Rabbi said, remember again, you see, beforehand, they were both able to eat truma. Why? Because one of them was a kohen and one of them was an eved, which means that either way they had a license to eat truma. Now that they're both free men, meaning neither of them is an eved, that we know for sure. Therefore, there's only a suffix, one of them is a kohen, one of them is not, you can't eat truma. Vim achlu, however, again, if they did go ahead and they both ate truma, ein misham and karen v'chomesh, they are not obligated to pay the principal and the additional fifth. Well, it's actually interesting. Why aren't they obligated to pay the additional karen v'chomesh? Why don't they have to pay the principal and the additional fifth? Because well, it's an interesting halacha that says amotzi mechaver alavarayo. If you want to go ahead and extract money from someone, so you have to be able to prove your claim. The burden of proof rests upon the extractor. So too over here, Abosai, if these guys both eat truma, and the kohanim come and say, you owe us money because you ate our truma legally, so what does the guy say? What does the guy who ate the truma say?
Prove it.
Prove it that I'm not a kohen. Right? So prove it that I'm not a kohen. So therefore, again, we tell him proactively, you can't eat truma, because we're not sure if you're a kohen, but if he did eat truma, we certainly can't give him lashes, and we certainly can't extract money from him. Ve'inan cholkin ala goren. We do not give them a portion of truma at the granary. Meaning, if they go ahead and they show up at the granary to collect truma, we do not have to dispense. We don't have to give them a portion. Umochrin esat truma v'adam shalom. Rabbi said, listen to this. Now, obviously, they're both going to be separating their own truma. What can they do? This is actually very interesting. They can go ahead and sell the truma and keep the money. Okay. Again, we'll define each of these cases. Ve'einan cholkin b'kodshei hamikdash. They do not receive sacrificial parts of karbanos. We do not go ahead and give them any kind of kachim. Now Rashi points out by the kachim hamikdash, Rashi points out as kigon oros kachim. Remember, part of what the Kohanim also got from Karbanos in addition to the meat was the hides. These guys do not even get the hides. Furthermore, again, the einosim and kachim, they do not go ahead and get sacrificial parts of animals. The einmotzin shelahem miadehem. But, however, we do not go ahead and take their sacrificial parts from them. Meaning, if they're offering a karban, technically speaking, they get to keep their sacrificial parts. I'm sorry? They can't do the service, but they get to keep the parts that will only go to Kohanim. Again, I will say, we're gonna go through each of these pieces. They don't have to give, they don't have to go ahead and give the foreleg, the chest, and the stomach. I will say, normally when you go ahead and you give an animal, so those are Kohanic parts that you have to give. These individuals do not have to give those parts. Ubechoro, what about a bechor v'him? I also remember, normally if you have a flock, so you have to give your bechor to the Kohen. So what's that? Ubechoro, the firstborn animal, yehei roa ad sheyistaiv. We allow his bechor animal to graze until it develops a blemish. And I'm going to say, what happens after it develops a blemish? Then it's no longer fit to be given to the... Well, I should say differently. Then it's no longer fit to be offered on the Mizbeach, and it becomes the property of the Kohen. So in this case over here, it becomes the property of these two, of these individuals. Right. I'm sorry? If you let an animal graze long enough, I mean, my extensive experience in farming indicates that if you allow it to go ahead and graze long enough, it will develop a blemish. And what happens? And they give upon these two boys essentially the chumras of Kohanim and the chumras of Yisrael. And I will say, we'll see exactly how that plays out. Okay, says the Gemara. So we'll say, the first part of the Gemara goes back to the first part of the Mishnah, which was the case, remember, of the child of the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law that gets mixed up. So the Gemara says, Mesuak Shenim. So remember, again, Abosai, in the second case of the Mishnah, you had a situation where each of these women had children previously to the mix-up. And the case was where, what? The Ksherim, so to speak, the Kasher children died. So the Gemara says, Elahanach Mishum De'eru V'lehu, Hava L'hu P'sulin. So I don't understand. You're telling me now, because the children were mixed up, does that render them P'sulin? Meaning the Gemara is intrigued by that Lashon of Ksherim. Meaning, if you're calling the other children that they had prior to the mix-up Ksherim, that would indicate that, what? That the children of the mix-up are called P'sulin. Is that true? You're right. Don't call it that the Ksherim got mixed up. Rather, say the Vadoin, the children of certain parentage got mixed up. So we'll say, remember again, in this case over here, the case of the Mishnah explained that the children of the daughter-in-law, one has to do chalitza, to which the Gemara says, Dafka michlatz v'hadar yivumi. The only works if first there is chalitza and then there is yibum. Why? Aval yibume berisha lo tekapaga v'yivam b'shuk. So we'll say, the Gemara is just pointing out over here that whenever you have a situation where there is a required yibum and a required chalitza, so the, or I should say, a potential, a chalitza and a yibum, chalitza always has to take place first. Because if yibum takes place first, you run the risk of what? Of someone other than the yavam having relations with this woman. And of course, again, that is a problem, ultimately, again, of having relations with a woman, ultimately, again, who is standing for yibum. Fine. Kohenesh and Isarev. So we'll say, now the Gemara, we're going to focus the rest of the time on this case of where the Kohenes, the Kohenes and her Shifcha have sons at the same time, and what happens? Those sons are mixed up. So says the Gemara, one of the things that what the Mishnah said is that Chulkin Chelek Echad Begorin, they only get one portion of Truma. These two children only get one portion of Truma. So the Gemara says, Chelek Echad Pshita. That's obviously only get Chelek Echad. I was meaning if these two boys show up at the granary and say, give us Truma, of course we're only going to give them one portion. To which the Gemara says, no, Ema Chelek Ke Echad. Perhaps what it means is the following. Perhaps what it means, excuse me, I'm sorry, chilek echad mashma shel kol echad. So we'll say, I'm sorry. So the first thing the Gemara assumes it means is each one only gets one portion. To which the Gemara says, of course, each one only gets one portion. What's the havamina? To which the Gemara says, no, what it actually means is chilek ke'echad. That's what, if you look at Rashi, chilek ke'echad, imbaush neim alagorin, nostin lahem. If both of them show up at the granary together, then we give them truma. Aval ze belo ze ein cholkin lahem. But if they come one without the other, we do not give them truma. Dika savra ein cholkin truma li eved ele imkein rabo imo. Dilma asila suki li yuchsin de savre koinu. So we'll say, what happens? What is the Mishnah coming to teach us? That you could only give them their respective truma portions when? When they show up together. Why? What does this mean? So the Gemara says, Tnan kimando amar in cholkin truma la eved. Ela imkein rabo imo. Our Mishnah reflects the view of the opinion that says what? That you can only go ahead and give truma to an eved if what Rabbo say? If his master is with him. Now why is it Rabbo say? As we're going to see, I'll just say this outside for just a moment, there's a concern that if a person is eating truma, that truma is almost like a stamp of approval on what? On a person's yichus. And you could easily make the logical jump to say that if Ploni is eating truma, he must be what? He must be a Kohen. Therefore, there is an opinion that holds that you could only give truma to an Eved if his master is with him. Because if people see his master is with him, then what? Then they know the reason he's eating truma is not because he's a Kohen, but rather because he is an Eved. Therefore, the Gemara now is suggesting that our Mishnah reflects that view. And therefore, when the Mishnah says, "V'cholkin chelek echad begorin," it means that we only give them their portions of truma if they show up together. But if one of them shows up without the other, we will not dispense truma out of concern that the one who showed up was maybe the Eved, and if we give him the truma, people are going to think that he's really a Kohen. So the Gemara says, Disanya, excuse me, Tnan, Kemando Amra in Chol Kin Truma Li Eved, Ele Imkein Rabo Imo, because our Mishnah is reflecting the opinion who holds that we do not give truma to an Eved, unless, of course, his master is with him. Disanya, Ein Chol Kin Truma Li Eved, Ela imkein rabo imo div Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda is of the opinion that you can only give truma to an eved if his master is with him. Rabbi Yossi says no. Yochol sheyomer. So no. Rabbi Yossi says the guy could show up at the granary and could say, "Listen, im kohen ani tenuli b'shvilatzmi." So the guy could show up at the granary and say, "Give me my truma, because if I'm a kohen, then give it to me because I'm a kohen. Vim eved kohen ani, and if I'm the eved of a kohen, then tenuli b'shvil Rabbi." Then give me on behalf, on account of my master. In other words, Rabbi Yossi say that Rabbi Huda holds that an Eved can only get Truma when his master shows up. Rabbi Yossi says, not true. An Eved can even get his Truma even without his master. Rabbi Yossi say, now what's the logic behind each of these opinions? Because Bimkomush Rabbi Huda, Hayu Ma'alin Mitchuma Liyuchsin. Rabbi Yossi say, Rabbi Huda's locale, they assumed that if somebody ate Truma, that meant what? That they were a Kohen. Therefore, because in Rabbi Huda's city, they would go ahead and assume about you, they would make assumptions about your yuchsin based on your ability to consume truma. Therefore, in Rabbi Huda's locale, an Eved could only go ahead and take truma if what? If his master was with him. However, Bimkomosh Rabbi Yossi lo hayu ma'alin mitruma liyuchsin. But in the city of Rabbi Yossi, they would not assume that if somebody ate truma, he was automatically a Kohen. Therefore, what? Rabbi Yossi allows the Eved to collect the truma even what? Even on his own. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok. So Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok said, Miyamai lo he'arati ela edos echad. So let's listen to this. Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok said, in all of my days, I only gave testimony once. I only gave testimony once. And what happened? Ve'helu eved l'kuhuna api. And I gave mistaken testimony, and they ended up making an Eved a Kohen based on my testimony. The Gemara says, what? Is that possible that they literally made an Eved a Kohen based on the testimony of Elazar bar Tzadok? So listen to the Gemara says, Hashta behemton shel tzadikim in HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevi takala yadan. I will say, if you know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is careful not to bring about negative events, even through the animals of tzaddikim, and Rashi points out over here. Rashi points out over here, Chamoro shel Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. So I'll say this is the famous story of the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair that we'll see Where is it? He quotes it over here from Maseches Chulin. We'll see this in a couple of Masechtos, that the donkey, the Pinchas Ben Yair, would not eat untithed produce. So, and the Gemara says over here that there's such Kiddusha by Tzadikim that even their animals won't transgress. So if we don't bring about negative events through their animals, are we going to bring about negative events through Tzadikim themselves? Is it possible that the Pinchas Ben Yair gave false testimony, obviously unknowingly, that elevated an Evet to the status of a Kohen? So the Gemara says, but rather the Gemara says what it meant is they were ready to go ahead and elevate an Eved to a Kohen based on things that I said. What happened? Chaza ba'asreid Rabbi Yossi. So we'll say Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok saw an Eved who was eating Truma in the, or actually who received Truma at the granary in the city of Rabbi Yossi. And I will say, remember, in the city of Rabbi Yossi, they gave out Truma to Avadim. Why? Why? Because in Rabbi Yossi's city, they did not make the leap from Truma to Yuchsin. They did not assume that just because you could eat Truma, that meant you were a Kohen. Therefore, they gave Truma out to Avadim. Because again, Truma would not be your seal of approval on your Yichus. And what happened? So he saw that there was an individual who was going ahead and getting Truma in the city of Rabbi Yossi, va'azel va'asid ba'asrei d'Rabbi Yehuda. So this guy, this Eved, now relocated to the city of Rabbi Yehuda. Now here's the problem. So they knew, Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok knew that when this Eved came to the city of Rabbi Yehuda, he was going to say what? That he eats Truma. Now what happens? In the city of Rabbi Yehuda, we'll say, what did they do? They elevated from Yichus based on Truma. So what's going to happen? So this guy was getting Truma in the city of Rabbi Yossi. Then he came to the city of Rabbi Yehuda. He was going to say, listen guys, I've been eating Truma. That should ascertain my identity, or that should solidify my identity as a Kohen. So what happens to Bosai? Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok came along and gave testimony about this guy, saying that what? He's not a Kohen. It's true. He ate Truma in the city of Rabbi Yossi, but that's because in Rabbi Yossi, they were not Malin, made Truma Liuchsin. So now he's coming to your city. Don't assume that because he's eating Truma that he's a Kohen. Fine. Ten Rabbanim. Asara in Chok in Truma Beis Agron. So we'll say there are 10 people for whom we do not give them Truma. If they come to the granary to collect Truma, we do not give it to them. Who are they? Ve'eluhein. Cheresh, deaf mute. Shota, an insane person. Katan, a minor. Tumtum. We've spoken about extensively already that Lemaisa, first of all, you should just know that this fundamental machlokes, this is a fundamental machlokes that we haven't resolved it yet, but this machlokes in Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Huda as to whether or not ma'alin mi truma liyuchsin, do we assume that because someone could eat truma, that therefore they're a Kohen or not? So you see that there was a difference of opinion. In Rabbi Huda's city, they assumed that Lemaisa what? That if you eat Truma, therefore that means you're a Kohen. And therefore, Rabbi Osai, in the city of Rabbi Huda, they would never dispense Truma to what? To an Eved by himself. He always had to be with his master. In the city of Rabbi Yossi, they were not Ma'alin mit Truma liyuchsin. They did not assume that because you can eat Truma, therefore what? Therefore what? You're a Kohen. And therefore, they would give Truma to an Eved, even what? Even without his master. So just keep that in mind. We're not finished with that yet. Now the Gemara says there are 10 people who...
Does Hamotzi Mechaver Olaharai apply to Truma? Does the Kohen have to prove that he's entitled to receive Truma? Isn't that his burden?
No, but remember, an Eved is also entitled.
But I mean, in terms of the argument between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, it shouldn't be a statement about anybody's Yichus. The person who's coming to collect it has to prove whether he's entitled to it or not.
No, but it's not. He's been eating it. He's been eating it. Well, he's been eating Truma all this time.
It has to do with whether he gets to eat other.
Right. No, it has to do. No, it's not a question of entitlement. It's a question of identity. The question is now, he has been doing something that is Kohanic in nature. The Shaila is, has he been doing it because he's a Kohen, or has he been doing it because he's an Eved? So there were just different practices in different cities. Apparently, again, in the city of Rabbi Yehuda, they assumed that somebody who was eating Truma was a Kohen. In the city of Rabbi Yossi, again, these are facts on the ground. It's not a question of, give me the Truma. He's been eating the Truma. Now the Shaila is, what does the fact that he's been consuming Truma, what does that tell us about his identity? In the city of Rabbi Yossi, absolutely nothing. I shouldn't say nothing. It tells us that what? That he's either a Kohen or an Eved. That's all it tells us. In the city of Rabbi Yehuda, if we know somebody is a Truma eater, that tells us that he's a Kohen. So it says the Braisa. There are 10 people, I'll say, for whom it's actually very interesting. We do not give them truma in the granary, but rather, again, as we're going to see, is we send it. Well, actually, we don't give them truma in the granary. Who is it? Who are they? Cheresh, deaf mute, Shota, deranged person, an insane person. Katan, a minor. Tumtum, I'll say, Tumtum, remember, is a person who has the membrane, the thick membrane, over the male and female organs, so we're not sure exactly what he is. The androgynous, someone who possesses two sets, right? Male and female characteristics. The eved, and a eved. The isha, a woman. Arel, someone who's uncircumcised. And Rashi points out over here that the case of Arel is a kohen shemesu achav machmas mila, where his brothers died because out of Mila, so he's uncircumcised. Tame, someone who's Tame. No Se'isha Sheno Genoslo, a Kohen who married a woman who he's not permitted to. Now, we're saying all of these cases, when we say we don't give it to them at the granary, it doesn't mean they can't eat Truma. It means that if they show up at the granary, we don't give it to them, but we'll send Truma to their house. We'll do Truma delivery. Chutz mitame v'no se'isha she'no genoslo. With the exception, of course, of a man who's tame, because if you're tame, you can't eat truma, or a man who's married to a woman in a legal marriage who is not permitted to marry. In that case, again, he is precluded from eating truma. So Basa says the Gemara, Bishlama chirish shoda v'katan lav b'nei de'aninu. So Basa, I understand why, if the Cheresh, Shota, and Katan show up at the granary asking for their truma, we're not going to give it to them. Why? Because they are not bnei dea. Because it will say they lack mental capacity. Rashi says, last Rashi on the daf, and therefore, vizilusa de truma, lechalik len begorin le'ein kol. It would be disparaging to truma, because remember, truma is kadosh, it would be disparaging to the sanctity of the truma to give it to people who lack capacity, to give it to someone who's insane, or to give it to someone who is a minor, or to give it to someone who's a deaf mute. These are all individuals who lack capacity. It would be a degradation. It would be a zilusa to the kiddush, to the holiness of truma, to dispense it to these people. Therefore, again, they're still entitled to it, but we're not going to give it to them in public. We'll send it to their house. Tumtum va'androgynous nami. So I understand also why I won't give it to a tumtum and androgynous. Why? Tap of kuf. Beria bifne atzmanin. Because it will say, again, remember, same thing. Rashi says, zilusa de kachim. It's not nice. It's disparaging to the kedusha of the truma to give it to these people who are anatomical anomalies. Eved nami. So too, again, we're not going to give it to an eved in public. Why? Dilma asi la asuke mitruma yuchsin. This Braisa seems to support Rabbi Huda's position, because what are we concerned about? If we give an Eved Truma in public, people don't know that. He doesn't wear a big sign that says Eved. People will automatically assume that what? Or more likely assume that he's a Kohen. So you end up running the risk of being Malehim to the Kuna. Orel Vitame. Similarly, again, Abba say, if a person is Arel and Tame, Mishum Dema'isi, because Abba say, ultimately, again, these are individuals who are disgusting, right? Physically repulsive. The Arel ultimately, again, has something that makes him, we'll call it physically repulsive. He has the foreskin. And the Tame, of course, is not necessarily physically repulsive, but more his state. His state is one of spiritual repulsion. However, again, no say isha sheno geneslo, and I will say the fact that a man who married a woman who he is not permitted to, that he doesn't get truma at all. I understand that. Why mishum kenasa ela isha my time alo? But why can't we give truma to a woman who shows up at the granary? I will say to be continued. We will stop. I'm going to leave you on the cliffhanger. We'll pick up in Meretz Hashem tomorrow. We're trying to understand why, if the woman, the wife of the kohen, shows up to the granary, why can't we go ahead and give her truma? Right, the phrase anatomically challenged. Well, I feel like a little offensive today. I'm feeling, I feel like I woke up on the wrong side of the bed.